today's show is proudly sponsored by Minding the Gap. You guys all know that mental health for dancers matters. You're on board. You want to see the culture in your studio change, but where do you start? Enter Minding the Gap. Minding the Gap is dedicated to seeing mental health regarded with the same seriousness as physical health in dance culture, and they come armed with solutions. Whether it's helping you craft policies and procedures that protect the mental wellness of dancers and staff, consulting to build a robust mental health program in your school or company, or providing mental health skills workshops for your students and teachers, Minding the Gap has you covered. They bring the expertise of the best dance mental health experts in the world to you. For more information, visit www.wearemindingthegap.org or click the link in the show notes. Hello, dancers. Welcome back. Today, I got to catch up with a good friend of the show, Glenn Keelich. You might remember him from season 1, episode 22, titled The One Where Dancers Are Human. And if you haven't already listened to that one, please do go back and listen because it is so, so good. Glenn revisits the show today to delve more into his own mental health as it relates to dance, gives us an exciting update to introduce his very own mental health podcast, The Mental Game, and to talk about how all of his mental health education thus far is informing his teaching practices. It's a really fascinating conversation, and I took away several tips and some cool stuff to try out in the classroom, and even just some things to kind of take with me and utilize throughout my day-to-day. So I hope you enjoy it. Please remember that I am not a mental health professional, and anything you hear me say on the show is based on my personal experience and perspectives and should not be considered medical advice. By listening to the podcast, you agree not to use any of the content to diagnose you or anyone else of any mental or health condition. If any of the things shared on the show resonate with you, I encourage you to talk to your doctor or click the link in the show notes to find the best healthcare professional for you. And as always, before we get started, I also want to mention that anything said on the podcast reflects my dance experience as a whole and not any one teacher, studio, or company. The opinions shared by my guests in this episode are their own and come from their individual viewpoint. This was such a fun and educational conversation with Glenn, and I hope you enjoy. Here you go. Hello, hello, dancers. Welcome back. I am so excited to welcome back an old friend of the show, Mr. Glenn Keelich. Hi, Glenn.
Howdy. Thanks for having me back. This is so exciting.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you and catch up. It's been almost a year since I spoke to you last in person anyway. I'm just really excited to hear what's new with you. So for our listeners who might have missed it, go back to season 1, episode 22. The One Where Dancers Are Human is the name of the title of the episode with Glenn, if you want to go back and listen to his first episode. But for those of you who might not have heard that episode yet or would like a quick refresher, Glenn, if you could just give us an overview of your relationship with ballet, as well as how your mental health has been impacted by that. And also, I just want to know what you've been up to the last year, because I hear you've been dancing a little bit more.
Yeah, I know. It's funny because every time I say I'm going to retire, I never actually retire. I always seem to come back. So I think I'm in like my sixth retirement. So I'm just never going to say I'm retired.
Yeah, just don't. It's again. Like Tom Brady. Like, just don't say it.
Just don't say it. Yeah, we're not retired. We're not dancing after this, but we're not retired. I don't know. Yeah. You know, it's whatever. Yeah. To give you kind of a quick review. So I had started dancing when I was somewhere around 10 or 11 years old. I was very heavily bullied growing up as a kid, and started doing ballet when I was 16. It was like halfway through my sophomore year of high school, but never more seriously, but, was still a football player and did both. So I never gave, you know, fully to either, until my senior year of high school, when I was like, this is what I want to do, but I definitely wasn't ready to go to a company and, didn't want to do like a traineeship just because I still wanted to do, you know, I wanted to get my degree. So I went to IU. It was perfect. It was right in my backyard. It's the best ballet program in the country. Go Hoosiers. I'm biased, but also, you know,
it's a pretty great program.
It is. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
But it gives you the best of both worlds. And I think that was really healthy for my mental health because, you know, to this point, I had never fully given to ballet. In high school, I was able to do football and ballet. And then in college, it was a Big Ten school, very large, you know, even program within the school, the Jacobs School that I was in, because you were doing school from like 8 to 11, and then you were dancing from 11 to 6, and then maybe you had school after, or, you know, there's a basketball game that night, or whatever it might be. So you're still living the best of both worlds. So it was really fantastic. And it wasn't until my junior year. And I don't remember if I said this on the first podcast or not, but I've recently been talking about it more. So
yeah, I'll
share here.
Yeah.
My junior year was my first, experience with like debilitating anxiety. I was having a lot of worrisome thoughts that I could not control, could not name, had zero awareness of what was going on. Mm-hmm. And that carried on into my first professional experience, which then got worse. I got a concussion in that company and ended up going, and that was my first quote unquote retirement, ended up going back to IU to get my degree. And through taking a random sports psychology class, I was like, wait, this exists.
This is a thing.
This is a thing.
Yeah.
And then ended up applying for the mental health counseling program at IU because of a professor who was like, yo, you can be a sports psychologist if you just like take these steps kind of thing. Which, you know, is a long winded way to kind of bring to where I am now. I've danced on and off since then. I've been in my program. I'm finishing up my program in May. I think it's like 66 days until graduation or something.
Oh my God, it's amazing.
Which is beyond wild because it's been like a 3-year, it was a 2-year degree, but it's taking me 3 because I was dancing and I was like a part-time student.
You have your realtor's license as well, right?
Yeah. And then, so that was one of the things that I did in
cool.
When I retired, I became a realtor during the pandemic. My mom and I were like,
Let's do something.
Cause my family was still fortunate to work, but the ballet, like I had retired from the ballet, and gotten shoulder surgery cause I had an injury, and was like, maybe this is what I'll do with the mental health thing. So I became a realtor. So if anyone's looking in Indy, Hamilton County area, let me know,
nice.
hit up your boy. So I became a realtor and, I've had a lot of really great experiences within my program. Like I've done internship experiences. So I've actually gotten to practice now as a mental health counselor, which is pretty cool. So I've been practicing mental health. I've been doing the real estate, and then I'll finally be graduating in May. So that kind of brings me to here, but the reason that we really got here was because, I've been applying to PhD programs and will happily share that I did not get in anywhere. And I think that's important to share because failure's just success in progress. So that's cool. But one of the parts of it is research, is doing research. And so, came all of these questions that I had about mental health and then wanting to kind of put it in this form. So that's kind of how we got here. But very excited to graduate soon and will hopefully be a licensed mental health counselor by the end of, this program.
That's
so very
fantastic.
Excited.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Thank you.
That's really exciting. Congratulations. Pre-congratulations.
Thank you. I know.
Congratulations on getting this far. I mean, that's huge.
It's been a, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, especially through like a pandemic and everything. And and I'm seeing pictures of you dancing and it makes me really happy.
Yeah. So it was funny because I had retired after, so the pandemic hit and I was like done and ready to give mental health all my attention. And then I had been doing the real estate and the mental health thing full time. And then it was December of this past year that I performed with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra in their Yuletide celebration, which is kind of like their version of a Nutcracker. Like it's just their Christmas spectacular.
It's like, for those of you who are not in Indy, because that's also where I'm from, it's like,
oh yeah, so you've
such
seen
a tradition. Oh yeah, that was my first exposure to dance when I was like 3 years old. Was the Christmas spectacular? Yeah.
I didn't know. Okay, maybe I did know that, but that's so cool.
Yeah, with like Sandy Patty. And
yes. Yeah, I got to dance with Sandy. I like.
That's amazing.
We did a little dance. Yeah. It was
Yeah. So for those of you not in Indy, the Christmas spectacular is like, it's way better than Nutcracker.
It's awesome.
I mean,
it is so cool.
It's like Christmas exploded everywhere.
Yeah,
like,
honestly.
I don't even know how to explain it. It's
honestly
like a parade on stage.
Honestly, it really is. And it's so cool. And it was cool to experience that. Mm-hmm. Because everyone knows about it in Indy.
Yeah, it's huge. It's singing and dancing. It's like a review, like an old timey Broadway review sort of thing. Yes. Yeah, super cool. So cool. I love that.
Yeah, but they had reached out to me in like July and said, hey, we're looking for a male ballet dancer. Would you be interested? And I hadn't danced in like a year and a half.
Wow.
But took a couple classes and auditioned, and they were very gracious and had me on. And then Vicky Lyris, the artistic director of Indie Ballet, was like, hey, I saw your dancing again. Do you have any desire to be in our upcoming shows? Because they needed guys.
Yeah.
And I was finished with my second internship experience as part of my mental health program. So I had more time this semester than I did last semester. So I was like, wait, why not? I'm already here. I'm in Indy. So that's just kind of what brought me back to Indy Ballet and dancing again. And so it's been really fun. It's been cool to see that it's still in there somewhere.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And you're enjoying it. So
Yeah. It's been great. Yeah. So very excited.
So talking about your working towards that MS in psychology, mm-hmm. You want to be... You're working towards becoming a licensed counselor, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the degree is in mental health counseling, and then it's the goal is to be LMHC, so licensed mental health counselor, like essentially ready by the end. So then I'll sit for licensure by the end of the program, and then hopefully that's what I'll leave with.
Yeah. So where do you plan on going with that? Private practice? Like, what's your goals with that?
Yeah. So by the time that this comes out, hopefully I'll have a better answer to that.
Yeah.
Because I had just recently applied for PhD programs, because that's my end goal, is to be a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And just being at the master's level won't help me. Well, it helps me get there, but it doesn't quite accomplish that. So I'm kind of in the phase now where I'm trying to figure out what to do next. So I'm applying for like professorships, master's level, assistant professorships, and then hopefully also working in some sort of private practice setting so that I'm doing a little bit of both. So I'm doing, because I want to be a teacher, a researcher, and a professor, or a teacher, a researcher, and in practice, and I want to practice as well.
Yeah.
So hopefully get two of those, and then my podcast being like the research side of things. So,
cool.
So hopefully I'll have a better answer in April, but definitely I want to teach and then want to be in a private practice setting as well.
I love it. Yeah. So I'm really interested, since you've kind of started back up dancing on a more regular basis and you are performing, so you're not just taking class.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to know what all of this, because you're immersed in all of this education about mental health. So you're way, way, way exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
Has that changed the way you train and perform?
Oh, 100%. I love this question.
Yes, I want to hear it all.
So this is something that's been so huge, because I'll give an example. So I've had experience before where like I was doing my first guesting, and it was in Dallas, Texas, and I had never done a guesting before. So I was beyond scared of like, I don't even know, like, how do I get groceries? Like, I don't even know, because I'm here for a week. Like, what to expect? I had zero clue what to expect. And during it was like the last dress rehearsal before performance, I just forgot what I was doing on stage. And it was one of the most, I don't know, it was just such a scary experience, because I was like, they brought me here, they're paying me all this money, and here I am like not able to perform, blanking.
Yeah.
And so that experience was, I guess you would say, the negative side of it. But then if you fast forward to Yuletide, I had a similar experience in rehearsal. It was one of the first times I was showing. So we had rehearsed, because I did like a little solo in it. And so I'd had rehearsals with my kind of choreographer. But it was one of the first times that I was performing it in front of other people. Mm-hmm. And I forgot what I was doing like three times. We did two runs, and both of those runs, I forgot something. And then the third time I eventually got it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking back to that first experience in my guesting, and I was like, okay, what can I do differently this time that I did not do last time? Because like you had mentioned, of all this exposure I've had, not just to mental health, but I've been in like sports psych classes, where I've been, kind of trying to figure out for other athletes, if this happens, what do they do?
Mm-hmm.
And so then I retrained my mind, not in that moment, but over the course of the next few weeks, to say, to see the experience differently, to reframe it, and to like make something positive of it.
Mm-hmm.
And having the mental health background, I think was instrumental in being able to flip the switch quickly and see that like exposure to anxiety in that setting was actually helpful, and it was facilitating a greater performance in the end, as opposed to being debilitating. And so, you know, the entire mental health program has really, it's so interesting because there are even other aspects like visualization that I've now incorporated into like my real time dancing while I'm learning about it, which is just kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Because I never thought I'd have the opportunity. And then seeing the benefits, because like I'm living the benefits. Like I see, okay, if I can see it in my head, then I know I need to go more to the left on my pirouette. Do you know what I mean? Like right. I can see it.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of crazy because it absolutely is giving me skills that now I'm able to use in real time during a show. So it's so cool. It's so cool. And it's something that I didn't think I'd be, you know, I just didn't think twice, like, oh yeah, I'm done performing. I never thought I'd actually have the opportunity to use these skills, but I had always said, if I ever knew, like if I ever got an opportunity, I would, and now I have. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it's really helped so cool. much.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. I think we've all had that moment, that scary moment on stage or in a dress rehearsal or, you know, just even in rehearsal with the director sitting in front of you and just going, oh God, I don't know where I have that experience. I was, and sadly it was with a partner.
Oh yeah.
So then that made it even worse. Right. He like looked at me like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? And it's really funny because my director was out of town that week.
Oh, even better.
And so he didn't see it.
Yeah, even better. That's hilarious.
So everybody just sort of like never told him.
Yeah, I'm just going to pretend that just happened.
So Daryl, if you're listening, I screwed up a show.
That's so funny. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's like, oh my gosh, what's going on in that moment? Yeah. It's so scary. So, and then to have another person that count on you.
Yes. Yeah. That anxiety, man. Woof.
Oh yeah. No, it's rough.
It's real. It's real. Uh-huh. That's super cool though.
Yeah.
So now you talked a little bit about what goals you have for the podcast to become sort of a research piece, so to speak, for your work. But I'd love to hear the story of how you got to start the podcast in the first place and what it's called, all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you. So yeah, so I guess you coming out with your podcast definitely kind of sparked my interest in like that this is a thing. Because I think over the last couple of years, podcasts have become bigger, right? The idea of having one. And then when I saw you guys do it, I was like, wait, that's so cool. And so that was kind of the initial idea of like, oh, that's a thing, I guess. Yeah, or like, you know, you can kind of talk about what it is you want to facilitate. So had an idea in the very, very back of my head that maybe one day I would want to do that.
Yeah.
But it was, so I started kind of conducting my own random research, because I knew I wanted to be in a PhD program, and I knew I started just having a lot of these questions. My biggest ones being like, what are the greatest barriers to mental health help seeking in ballet dancers and all performers, but in ballet dancers, because there's a great need for mental health, but very few people actually seek the help that they need. So what are the barriers to that? Why is that? And some other random questions, but I was like, well, I can just start, I don't have to have a PhD to start asking these questions.
Yes.
And I thought I did. And so that was kind of like a mental shift that I had to take. And so I was like, well, I'll just start asking people. So I started interviewing people, over the summer of 2021. So last summer, and just kind of throughout the semester. And some of the ways that one of the questions I asked is, how can we facilitate, you know, greater, not only awareness of mental health in these spaces, but a greater capacity for acceptance of mental health and a greater capacity for incorporating mental health into ballet companies, ballet schools, and whatnot. And so it was through asking those questions, the answer that kept coming up was, we need to have conversations. We need to talk about it. We need more time to talk about it. Well, of course there's like the money piece and the time within this. But the biggest one was like, we need to have conversations. And so I said, okay, so how do we facilitate conversation? Well, that's where the podcast idea came up, because I was like, I don't need a PhD for this. I'm just going to start having conversations. And so that's kind of what happened, was I started saying, well, I can create those conversations now. And it doesn't have to just be one-on-one with, you know, a dancer in a company and say, okay, well, we created this conversation. Now that's one person.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to have to go to another, and that's two people. How can we do this at a greater scale? The podcast. That was kind of the idea. So it was with the idea. So the podcast is called The Mental Game. I've had kind of like a mental game Instagram for a really long time because I've always loved personal growth, development, and just wanting every single human being to reach their full potential. And so I just kind of went off of that because I think we're all just playing a big mental game in our lives.
Yeah.
And so the entire premise of the mental game is to create awareness about mental health, is to start answering some of these questions of how can we incorporate more mental health? How can we, through our stories, right, can more people then be willing to speak out to then create the real necessary change to actually have an environmental effect, as opposed to, right, individuals can do as much as they want, but it has to be from, you know, an entire environment. It has to be an entire culture change.
Yes.
So that's where it kind of initiated and then is taking shape. And yeah, the mental game. And I've only have 2 episodes out as of today. But have a couple more. I have another one on the way this week, and just going to continue to facilitate conversations because I think that's at the moment, that's the greatest way to create more awareness to then move on to the next step of implementing mental health resources, of incorporating help seeking. And so, you know, just being the first step to getting to the next one, I guess.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, because that's what I'm doing too.
Yeah, right.
If I didn't agree, then there would be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I always say, like, it's just 2 words.
Mm.
Normalize, destigmatize.
Mm. Yes.
That's all. Like, that's all we need. That's all this ballet world needs, because I feel like so many things boil down to those 2 things. Normalize, whether we're talking about mental health, or we're talking about bodies, whether we're talking about any sort of, like, pick any quote problem in the ballet world, and it pretty much can be boiled down to either normalize or destigmatize.
Right. Absolutely.
And we'll find further progress. So
and not just with the stigma, but then what is the I guess kind of like what comes of it, right? So like if it's stigmatized, right, the negative effect that comes with it being a stigma is, like you said, the word problem is a really strong word, but that's how it's, you know, that's how it's seen right now. And so, you know, breaking down that word and changing just the entire way that we see the stigma. So no, I appreciate sharing that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super, super cool. And another thing too, guys, is that, like, yes, you can absolutely start a podcast. And, like, part of the reason why I wanted to have Glenn on the show is just another opportunity to say to everyone out there that if you would like a seat at the table, make one for yourself, because that's, like, number one, you're in control of your own destiny. And if you're wanting to learn more, if you're wanting to, whatever the topic is, you know, make a seat for yourself at the table. And on a smaller scale, you know, the more we share with our friends in the company, in the school, in the locker room, you know, over coffee or whatever, hey, I'm really struggling with this.
Right.
Like, are you struggling too? Like, even those small conversations, even if they're not facilitated by a mental health professional, just that simple act of sharing with one another is going to lead you towards more personal growth. It's going to lead towards environmental or more global change, what you're talking about, Glenn.
I love that you said that, because one of the classes I've taken is group counseling. And one of the key components to facilitating, you know, a therapeutic factor, if you will, is, like you said, the sharing. And so when I teach, one of the things that I do with my students, sometimes one of the students I teach at, they just went to 2 competitions in a row. So, you know, having them on a Monday, they're like dead tired.
Yeah. They're fried.
They're fried the entire week. And so sometimes I'll start class and we'll just kind of share, like, what went well this week? What do you want to work on? And sometimes, you know, with the things they want to work on, they'll bring something up that's heavy for them, that's weighing on them. And again, not yet a licensed therapist, this is more just like creating conversation amongst one another. But sometimes, you know, that's what, then if someone shares something, you check in, who else is feeling that? And then there's that factor of universality, that you're not alone, right? That we're all kind of all experiencing these things. We might just not talk about them, or we might just not talk about them. And so hopefully creating that, like you said, that culture, that environment, that's more conducive to sharing, and then hopefully they'll do that amongst one another, and they'll feel that therapeutic alliance between each other and then with the teacher, or You know what I mean? So then hopefully just kind of facilitating a greater, not just exposure to mental health, but awareness and positive space for it.
Yeah. A feeling of normalcy that, like it's cool if I say, it's cool for me to say I'm having a hard time with this thing or just in general.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be judged negatively by my peers or my superiors. Mm-hmm.
No, because usually if you ask, like if someone else, you know, I deal with that, I'll put my hand up. That's something that's happening for me too. Is anyone else experiencing it? And then you'll see 10 other hands raised, but you wouldn't have known because sometimes we just don't want to talk about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also that one person who may not raise their hand, but, and that's okay. Like if they're not comfortable or feeling safe enough yet to raise their hand, but they're going to go home potentially and be like, oh, well, I'm not crazy. I'm not a freak. There are other people like me who are experiencing similar feelings.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's helpful too. So I love it so much. It's really cool.
Yeah.
So I'm going to steal a little tagline from your podcast.
Sure.
It says, working to increase awareness of mental health and performance spaces through real conversations. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we've kind of talked about globally and a little bit specifically, but if you could talk a little bit more about the impact that you hope to have, that you hope these conversations will have on the dance world, but also the wider performing world too, because I know that you're a sports fan, like you're a sports lover. Yeah. You know, you've worked with singers, you've worked with dancers, actors. So I'd love to hear kind of like your evil plans.
Yeah, no. So I love that you asked that, because the real conversations piece of it is just hopefully, you know, I'm trying to have very raw, very authentic conversation that, you know, I think people may be, like you had said, scared to kind of share these things. But giving them like a safe space to do it, because, you know, every space isn't a safe space. So hopefully giving them a safe space to do it. But with that, with the performance piece of it, I've always definitely had an interest in more than just ballet, because I think it's everywhere, right? It's not just ballet, and it's not just the ballet portion of one person's life if they're a ballet dancer, because everything's transferred. There's a spillover effect into everything we do. So the performance piece comes into play because I hope to have on, he is a instructor, and, you know, he's been on Broadway, and he teaches for American Dance Exchange. Like, you know, I have someone like that, or I have a former Rockette that I'm reaching out to, you know, so I'm trying to get people from all different walks of life, because even if we're from different walks of life, we all have the same experience, right? At the end of the day, we all have Maslow's hierarchy of needs that we need met. So we're all having a very similar experience, and it doesn't really matter the space. And I don't think it's just important in the ballet community. I think if it's more accepted in the dance community in general, or like you had said, in musicians, singers, then I think it's going to be accepted everywhere. Because like even a little example, when I was doing Yuletide, I had a friend that I was in a singing part, which is funny because I was contracted as a dancer.
Yeah.
But I was like dancing in a singing part, and they wanted us to sing, and they wanted, you know, me and my buddy to sing too. And another friend I had asked, you know, I didn't ask him how to sing, but basically I was like, hey, I'm horrible at singing.
Need
what
help.
Do I need
yeah.
to do?
Yeah. I've had that experience myself.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he had even said like, no, you're not incapable of singing. That's just something someone had told you once. And so now you believe it. And so I was like, wait, so this mental game we're playing, right? He's aware of it in the singing community. Do you know what I mean? So it's not just ballet. It's not just contemporary dance companies. It's not just singers and actors and actresses. It's a universal experience we're all having. And then I think the more like his saying that made me feel like, oh, you know, that I can dance in a ballet company again. And if I can't do this double pirouette, it's probably just because someone told me, you know, or like whatever the example might be.
Yes.
It's just because someone said that I can't do something or that it didn't look good doesn't mean I can't. It's just that then is what molded my mindset, you know, or could have, if you will. And so I think I just saw all of these different worlds kind of having the exact same experience. And that's why I said, okay, so let's make this all about performance, because I can take one performance aspect you know, this idea a singer gave me, or this concept a singer gave me, a framework, and I can apply it to the ballet world too. Sure. And even when I was, you know, I have a professor that I'm really close to at IU, and he was kind of saying the same thing to me, like, you can look up, let's say, an intervention that worked for a soccer player, mm-hmm. and maybe it's not, you know, evidence-based for ballet necessarily, like, yes. a, you know, but yes. the idea is yet. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so then trying to figure out, does this work for ballet dancers? Also, can this be transferred over to a different community? And hopefully it would be able to, right? Because it yeah. works for performance, right? That's the right. idea, is it's the umbrella of performance. So that's kind of what I hope to accomplish, is like, not make a mainstream set of, you know, conversations or interventions necessarily, but just kind of allow people that same experience of like, I got this awesome piece of advice from a singer and now I'm using it in my ballet, you know, life. Yeah. And so I think that's more, I think that could be more common. So that's what I hope to create, is just conversations, different perspectives, honestly.
Yeah.
Different perspectives.
Yeah. I'm really fascinated by also how culture, the culture that you're in impacts mm-hmm. your perception of mental health.
Oh yeah.
And how that can be applied to your own life, but also like how easily you accept that. Uh-huh. And you know, I've spoken to 40 plus people about ballet, and I have my own experiences in ballet, but it's really interesting, you know, how I'd like to learn how, or if you have an opinion on how different cultures, like the actor culture or the singer dancer culture, how it differs from the ballet only culture, for example, yeah. or even someone in non-dance fields and non-performance right. art fields, like sports and things like mm-hmm. that, and how their specific cultures affect their willingness, I guess, to okay. talk about mental health, and or like how quickly their culture is going to change. Because I feel like right. some might be more adaptable than others, mm-hmm. perhaps. Sure.
Yeah. So that's a really good question. And I'm going to do my best to answer it from my perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why I want to also help facilitate awareness, is because I think it's a bit slower to come forward in ballet. It's coming, but it's even so. One of the cool things about the program I'm in is sometimes they'll bring in speakers. And so like, I've spoken to, you know, a sports psychologist for the Seattle Seahawks. And he was telling us, you know, the NFL, every single team has to have, and I say has to, as if it's a negative thing, you know, every single NFL team has a sports psychologist now, yeah. every MLB team, every NBA team. It's not only seen as a good thing, but now it's required, like in a healthy way. You know what nice. I mean? Like they're aware of what's necessary,
it's
and they're
of
aware
their benefits of, package.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. 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 Like they're yeah. aware of how important it is and how it can positively impact the culture, environment, team, et cetera. And ballet's not there yet.
Yeah.
And
I mean, we're lucky so, if we get health insurance, right?
Yeah. And even then it's not great if you do.
No.
Yeah, right.
They'll exactly. give you a gym membership before they give you health insurance.
Honestly, yeah. And I know very few companies that do that. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so that's I think that's where ballet is behind, is yeah. in but the mainstream sports also have, you know, a way bigger fund. You know what I mean? So they're yeah.
they've got a little bit more money to play with.
Absolutely. So even if they're paying yeah. a sports psychologist $100,000 a year, that's nothing for them.
Yeah, it's a rounding you error.
Know? Yeah, like different companies I've been in have had even physical therapists, but they're mm-hmm. only in there once a week or twice a week for 2 yeah. hours.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
For where clinic hours, yeah.
For clinic
yeah.
hours yeah. and a sports team has a surgeon on staff available to them at a moment's notice. You know what
sure.
I mean? So
yeah.
I understand that there are some barriers like funding and maybe time that yeah. that other sports don't have to deal with. But I think that's probably one of the things that's causing the culture to shift slower is just there's less ability to incorporate it because of that. Because I do think a lot of people, even if it was just to check a box, would, if it was, but maybe if it was, maybe if there was a want and a need that was yeah. pushing it further,
yeah,
then
dancers.
They would figure it out.
Yeah, start asking right. questions of your Honestly. Leadership. Like, hey, we want this service. We want, you know, thinking like organizations like mm-hmm. Minding the Gap, who sponsor my mm-hmm. show. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, they're starting to deliver
yes.
Those psychological services mm-hmm. to companies, to, you know, ballet schools right. and so forth. So, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. it has to come, like, it has to be, sometimes this type of change has to be pushed from multiple yes. directions. Right. Right. Like, it can't just all be from the dancers or mm-hmm. all be from, you know, the culture wanting mm-hmm. to shift or whatever. It just sort of, you have to kind of apply respectful,
yeah,
but a little bit of pressure, you yeah. know, to keep moving it up the priority list.
Absolutely. And I yeah. think, but I think, so that's kind of the ballet experience. So I can't really speak to other mm-hmm. professions, just because this is kind of the only one I've been in. Like, I've been in other environments. Like, I spoke about Yuletide. That was yeah. one of the most amazing environments I've ever been in. And because everyone was loving, accepting, and you really felt that just kind of unconditional, like, you know, we want you here and whatnot. So mm-hmm. I don't know if every Broadway-esque environment is yeah. like that. No, I don't know. I can't yeah. speak to that. But I think for the culture of ballet compared to at least mainstream sports, that's probably the biggest mm-hmm. difference.
Yeah. Yeah, that access is really important.
Access is huge. Yeah. But actually, let me share, if I could share one more story about that.
Of course.
Because you had mentioned the pushing thing. I've interviewed someone and I'm not putting their interview anywhere online. Like, it's just, it was strictly for research purposes that I shared with a PhD interview of mine. So this mm-hmm. person's absolutely anonymous and will never, you know, won't come out. But they showed that I could share the story, and the story being, it was a person who was interviewing for an assistant directorship at one point. And I'm just going to use she, her pronouns for the sake of just, I just, you know, want
to
say
that's it. Like, just to make it easy.
Not going to say if it was, just to make it easy. Tell the story. And she was wanting to implement a mental health initiative. Okay. And wasn't laughed at, but said that they were more worried about what, you know, what she was wearing that day than the mental health initiative. And so, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
that's where we're at.
Oof, that raises some questions too about, you know, that raises a lot of questions. Let's just put
yeah.
it that
Oh yeah. No, it's way. Very problematic. Yeah.
Yeah, very problematic.
Mm-hmm. But kudos to, you know, kudos to that person for wanting to do that. But then to just show you where we're at, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not good. But
not great.
That's what we're working on, right?
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I really love that. I think that's, but it's important for us to kind of take the temperature of where sure. we are, you know, mm-hmm. so that we know how far yet we have to go.
Absolutely. And that might not be right. And that might not be the experience for every company or school or college or, you know what I mean? You like, mm-hmm. university setting, like I've gone back to IU a couple times and I see all kinds of resources on the board now, which is cool. fabulous. Yeah. And they're very open door policy, you know what I mean, like things are changing in some mm-hmm. aspects. Mm-hmm. So love to see it, but it's slow. It's such a yeah. slow grind.
How much do you think that has to do with, and again, like I know that, you know, this is just your anecdotal yeah. personal yeah, yeah. opinion, but
for sure.
I've asked a couple of people this, and I'm wondering, like, how much of that is generational and how much of that is like, despite generation, people mm-hmm. are starting to make changes, whether it's from pressure from the outside yeah. or they've done the work themselves and they're like, uh-huh. okay, this needs to change.
Uh-huh. I love that question. And so many thoughts are coming to my head.
I know.
because I feel like it can be, the answer is it depends, which is the worst mm-hmm. answer. But I think of an example. I just interviewed a really awesome person who I danced with while I was at IU, and she had spoken to Violette. So Violette Verity. So I was very mm-hmm. lucky. I was able to be with Violette for a year and a half before she passed.
I had her for 8 weeks and yeah. I felt like she was my grandma. Like,
oh my gosh.
She's so
exactly.
amazing. She's
exactly.
such a gift. Such a gift.
Oh my gosh, such a gift. And that's yeah. what we were talking about, was Violette was of the, you know, the oldest living generation of that,
yeah.
that you know, kind of ballet dancer, but she was the most lovely human being I've ever come in contact with.
She was probably the kindest teacher I have ever had in my entire life.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like the person, her name is Maribel. I had her on my podcast. She was talking about like they were cold in the theater one day mm-hmm. and Violette gave her sweater. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like Violette
was
probably
what,
cold
like
too.
90?
Yeah, she was like 90 years old, fabulous as ever. Yeah. Oh, and so, you know, and so that's why I say it depends. I think as a whole, yes. Mm-hmm. I think as a whole, it's generational.
Yeah.
Because I think there are less people like Violette than there are not. I think she was an absolute mm-hmm. gem and an outlier. So, but just to say that it does, you know, I don't want to speak for all the people. But yeah, I think there are more people of the opposite. And mm-hmm. I think that's part of the problem. But I do think I have experienced also the seeing the pressures an artistic director has faced and then saying, I need to change because obviously something's not working. Mm. And it's a slow change. And that's what's tough is we want it to be a switch, right? We want that kind of age, that generation to be able to just flip a switch right away. And realistically, when we're growing as human beings and we're doing the work as human beings, it doesn't happen that fast. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, it takes patience on our side to say, I see you doing the work and I appreciate that, but we got to get there faster because it's still not healthy. So, you know, it's a bad answer, but it depends. I think people are working on it more than ever because they're seeing the pressures of like the dancers are on the move. You know what I mean? We're creating as much mm-hmm. awareness and we're starting to really stand up for it as much as we possibly can. So I think, but it, you know, and so that's where I even struggle too. I'm like, I need to show more grace sometimes for people who I know are trying to change, because if you didn't grow up like that, realistically speaking, it's not, you know, we shouldn't expect you to be able to just turn on a dime.
I'm older than you for sure. I'm almost 40. So like even people of my generation who might be teaching or in spaces of leadership, I feel like, and this could be completely wrong, but I feel like my generation is sort of like the transitional one.
Yeah, sure.
We're like, all of our teachers were mm-hmm. absolutely on one side.
Yep, 100%. Except
with a few exceptions. Sure. Like Violette. Yeah. And then on the other side, people younger than us who are like probably still dancing, right. You know, maybe starting to think about leadership, that sort of thing. Like they've had a totally different experience than what we had, you know? So, I mean, that could just be me being a little egocentric and like just living in my own world. But
sure.
I even feel like when we're talking about, quote, older generation, like not to call myself old, but that's fine. I don't like, I'm cool with it, whatever.
40 years but young.
I even feel like when we're talking about, quote, older generations, it's actually not that old, you know? And it's like, okay, so where's the line? Like, you know, I'm just waiting for this wave of new leadership to come through of a younger generation where it's just going to all of a sudden, everything's going to disappear and it'll be lovely. But I'm sure that's wishful thinking.
No, that's really good. That's a really good thought. And I actually agree because I do feel like, you know, that that kind of transitional phase that you had mentioned, I do see that more. It's like with the older generation, like you said, Violette was an outlier. There was 1 out of 100, you know, maybe with the middle generation, it's like 50-50, you know, and then hopefully, like you had mentioned, like, I know I guess you would say kind of like a young budding teacher. Like I've only been a ballet teacher for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, but I'm trying to implement all of these things. Like, you know, I know I talk about this on my podcast too, like a positive, corrective, positive way of teaching. Do you know what I mean? So like being aware of how to then teach. And I think, because we're growing up with that awareness, or I guess not just awareness, but better frameworks to teach from, or however you want to say it.
Well, and I think too, like even thinking about my students that I've had within the last couple of years who are in high school and the way they speak about themselves, the way they talk about their day, the way that they interact with one another is so different.
So different.
So different.
Uh-huh.
And in a positive way,
uh-huh.
you know, like the way they relate to one another, how respectful they can be. I mean, yes, bullying is like a huge problem and you know, that's over here, but like, they are cognizant of one another's pronouns and they're cognizant
of,
like, oh, my friend has ADHD. So like, I understand that she's not better or worse than me. We just have learning differences, you know, like things like that, that kids are just so much more cognizant of. And I feel like they give each other a little bit more grace, you know, in those moments. And I feel like they have the language
Yeah.
to talk about these things more mm-hmm. so than I certainly ever did. And I'm starting just now in, right. you know, my late 30s to develop. Mm-hmm.
No, that's totally fair, because I was actually talking about this with a friend of mine who also teaches at the same studio, is that like, we even have to go about it differently than we did growing up. Like, mm-hmm. I know it sounds crazy to think that, like, you know, I'm 25. So to think right. that when I was in high school at like 16, 17, 18, you know, we went to class, we didn't talk, we worked our butts off. Like we, mm-hmm. there was no kind of, like, it was, I guess you would say, work. Like we went there to do something, and then in between classes, maybe we were chatting and hanging out yeah. and talking about different stuff. But yeah, this generation is very different. Like they appreciate, okay, we're spending 5 minutes to check in. Where are you at? Yes. Thumbs up, middle down, you know, yes. where are you at? Yes. And so it's just so different. So even, you know, even I, as a 25-year-old, have yeah. had to like check myself in terms uh-huh. of like, what do I need to do for this generation? You yeah. know, so it happens so fast. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it really, I'm sure, you know, it affects the way that you have to plan classes too. And the yeah. way you plan your curriculum, you yep. know, because, you know, depending on what curriculum you're teaching from, if you're teaching from a curriculum that has like graded tests and things like that,
oh, sure.
or, you know, just more general where you're mm-hmm. just sort of the only ballet teacher at a studio right. and you're responsible for all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of pressure to design a curriculum that's going to get them physically through what right. they need to get through for mm-hmm. appropriate to their development and what their goals are. But then on top of that, to incorporate all of this quote new stuff
yeah.
that we're learning in order to ensure a safe learning environment, that they're being taught in a way that is going to facilitate them as artists mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. not inhibit their artistry because mm-hmm. of all this mental health crap, you know, right. like mm-hmm. so yeah, how do you approach then designing your classes?
So in terms of designing my classes, I don't know if there's anything I necessarily do differently other than, like, I'm thinking of my Tuesday class, for example. There are three girls who I always check in with because they're older, mm-hmm. for the class. They mm-hmm. Took it as an extra class.
Okay.
So like what I'll do is I'll check in with them. Hey, what do you guys need today? Do you know what I mean? To kind of see yeah. where they're at. And they're very honest with me. They're not just going to say, oh, we want an easy class every single week. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Can
like they'll say,
class?
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. yeah. And I think that kind of like authentic communication, I guess, yeah. maybe, or honest communication, as opposed to that, like you said, because that could be the case. Mm-hmm. Right. But I think through that, maybe trust, like building more trust with them. Yeah. I think so. It's not necessarily that my class changes, but it's more of like how I go about it, because they might say, hey, you know, we had two conventions this weekend, you know, our legs are beat. Can we just yeah. have like a chill class where we, you know, maybe are working really hard at bar, but then we don't do as many jumping exercises because, like, you know, shins are hurting from like the ballroom floor at a convention center.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think it's more of just kind of checking to see where they're at, mm-hmm. at the beginning of every class. I always do a, you know, where are we at? Thumbs up to middle to down. Mm-hmm. And if everyone's doing really poorly, we'll spend 10 minutes to talk about, you know, what's going on.
Yeah.
Because if that's something that then we can, through dance, facilitate a greater experience, you know, now mm-hmm. we've gotten, you know, even if like it's, I see it as kind of an investment of 5 to 10 minutes to then create a better hour and 20
and or safer. Out
and safer. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's not necessarily the curriculum for me or the, you know, the steps necessarily, but it's just kind of trying to implement more that, you know, human to human interaction, mm-hmm. as opposed to just, I'm walking in the studio. Okay. Two demi-plies, grand plie, stretch forward and back, second position. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Mark like, it with your hands and yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I'm going to check in and see how you're doing. Yeah. I'm going to make eye contact with you when I call your name for attendance. You know, to see where you're at. So I think yeah. it's more of those small things that I'm trying to do. And that I know, you know, a few other teachers are really working hard to do as well, as opposed mm-hmm. to just, you know,
giving,
I want you to have a double pirouette by the end of this year. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Right.
So,
yeah.
I think just implementing more of those sorts of strategies. And
yeah. Yeah. I always used to say when I was dancing, I would always say, like, I hate having teachers or ballet masters who give class
yeah
and they don't teach class, like that yes. was my pet peeve.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Like I get it, like when you're, you know, when you are a professional dancer, yes, like your technique,
yeah,
your artistry, everything is on you, like at the end mm-hmm. of the day, like you are mm-hmm. responsible for all of mm-hmm. those things, and I don't disagree with that, But at the same time, it's like when someone gives class instead of teach class, it's missing all of those human elements.
Yeah.
Like they don't necessarily have to come up and give me a correction, like even once throughout the whole class, but you know, some general comments would be nice. And also look me in the, in the eye and say hello. Like,
well, and I think that's a really great point. And another guest had said something similar on my podcast in terms of like meeting the dancer where they're at as well.
Yes.
So I think the difference, like you said, between giving, I'm sorry, what was the difference?
Giving class and teaching class.
Giving class and teaching class.
Yeah.
And so like, I'm going to, and I think this is one of the beautiful things about, I say this generation, like the younger generation, as if I'm that old, but the younger, but it is, but it's different, right?
But dance generations are very small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but I think one of the,
absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the amazing differences is that this generation wants to know why you're teaching them what you're teaching them. And we didn't ask questions. We were just, we just took it. And I think that's such a beautiful thing, because now, you know, it makes sense, because I'm a ballet teacher at a competition dance studio. So I really have to be cognizant of, why am I giving you this ballet step? How is this going to transfer into what you want to do? How is doing a plié going to make you a better contemporary dancer?
Yes.
And so, like you said, I think that's the difference then between, you know, giving class, teaching and whatnot, because we have to be more aware of, you know, don't just do four tendus. Why are you doing four tendus and how are we doing four tendus and how is it going to help you?
Yeah. What does that translate to otherwise? Yes, yeah,
absolutely.
And I think, I mean, that might've been a little bit of my issue that I had both growing up as a professional dancer, is like, I'm always asking questions. Like if you take the, what is it? The four tendency personality quiz, you know what I'm talking about? Gretchen.
What are they? Gosh, I probably
like
done
the questioner, the rebel.
Oh, I've never taken that one. No.
Oh, it's really good.
That's cool.
You'll have to have a book over here somewhere. But yeah, Gretchen Rubin. I'm all about the self-help book. So
me too.
I love personality tests. But anyway, I'm the questioner. That is my personality type. And so it's very difficult to motivate me to do something unless I know why you want me to do it.
Yes.
You know, I'm not just going to blindly follow you.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of always been how I am. And, you know, I would have teachers that would take the time and say, okay, so like if we do this way and you change this way, then later on in class, when you do Grand Allegro, you're going to get this result, you know, or whatever the thing is. And they actually would take the time to do that. And then versus the teachers that didn't take the time to do that, or even worse, like, would shame you for asking questions. Like, oh, that's not your place to ask questions. We did not get along.
No, that's so fair. Because then also I feel like, because they're taking the time, and because you can genuinely feel that they're wanting to, like, they're accepting of your curiosity, right? Which is such a beautiful thing, is then you want to work hard for that person.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So then it's just, we're just really creating a different kind of positive environment that's more conducive to learning.
It's a human exchange of ideas too. Like you get energy from one another through that process. And at the end of the class, like, sure, you should be physically tired.
Yeah.
You know, because you've exerted a lot of energy, but I don't ever feel like you should be psychologically tired or mentally tired after ballet class because someone's just taken everything from you.
Yeah.
You know, like if, or even as a teacher, you know, if you feel like drained mentally at the end of a class, then you should probably look at how you're designing it and like where that energy is going, you know?
So. I love that. And I love that aspect of thinking of things as a teacher too, because as a teacher, like you had said, if you're creating an environment where it's welcomed, right? You know, if a 13-year-old asks me a question about doing something, but I didn't think of it, but it's so helpful even to them, or you know what I mean? Like, that's awesome. Like, it doesn't have to be my way. This is for you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. This is your class, not
this
mine.
This is your class.
It's not
this
about
isn't
me.
My class.
Yeah. I'm just here to like guide you through.
We're just
whatever.
Facilitating. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, God, I want to come take your class now.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Let's do it. That would be fun. Yeah, I love it.
Oh, so fantastic. Well, this has been really fun. Yeah. I mean, you've learned already just from having a few guests. You've learned so much already, it sounds like.
It's cool.
Are there any other sort of like general bullet points you want to share with us of things you've learned through your interviews?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think if we're talking from the teacher perspective, I think one of the things that stands out to me is I had a Greg, his name's Greg. And he teaches where I do. We both teach at Expressions Dance Center. It's a wonderful.
Yeah, wonderful, I'm familiar with them. Yeah, they're really successful.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
They're I'm always seeing them on the gram, et cetera.
Oh yeah, no, you got to check out their social media. They go crazy. Yeah, absolutely. they're so talented. It's insane.
Yeah.
One of the things that he was talking to me about from a teacher's perspective is kind of just what we're saying of like meeting the dancer where they're at and how important that is. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that I try to implement every day of what I'm teaching. It's not just like, how can I help you get from your point A to your point B, but you know, how can what I'm doing be more beneficial to you?
Yeah.
Like I think of a teacher who, I've experienced, and they were talking about something that was very obviously geared towards maybe their experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more we're talking about like this generation, the more we need to realize that we have to gear everything towards them. You know, you have to meet them where you're at. Like hopefully soon to be licensed therapist, I'm meeting a client where they're at. I can't tell them how, you know, maybe my anxious symptoms, you know, and what I did for, you know what I mean? It's not like that.
Yeah. Be this way, this way. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
This is where you are. So let's work here.
Absolutely. It's not helpful to just assume everyone's experience is your own. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh. Other bullet points. I think honestly, it's just everyone has something. And I think I realized that through the interviews, but then also just through teaching, like the more human interaction you have with your students, the more human interaction we have with each other, the more we realize that other people are going through things too. And, you know, I think to a student I had in the past who, you know, I had for a private was sharing with me some really, you know, deep stuff and had some problematic behavior in other classes. And the other students saw that problematic behavior as, you know, a negative, but it's because they didn't take the time to really understand the person. So I think that kind of goes for all of our experiences, all of our interactions, is we're all having these things go on. And I think that's something that's so important to implement then at a company level and, you know, at schools, universities and whatnot, because I think, like I had said, with kind of the taking 10 minutes to invest in their time so that the rest of the hour and 20 is better, I think the more we see those things, that mindset shift of like, this is an investment. So even incorporating more mental health resources, the more we see it as an investment, as opposed to like, oh my gosh, how are we going to have the money for this or whatever it might be.
Or like, then, oh gosh, we only have, you know, 80 minutes of class left.
Yes.
Like, what am I going to have to cut now?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, just do grandma, ma, and fondue in the same combination and they're going to enjoy the rest of it so much more or whatever that might be.
I am the queen of combining combinations.
Right? Yes, absolutely. Yes. Like, let's be efficient with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think the more that we begin to implement some of these things, regardless of the barriers, the more we can just continue to have conversation, the more awareness we create. The more awareness we create, the more ability we have to then either destigmatize it or at least start to take steps of implementing mental health or like I know IU does like a mental health day now. You know what I mean? Like different things like that, or at least being more accepting of different things. Like if a dancer says, hey, I need 30 minutes, like I'm going to have a mental breakdown. And then being understanding of that 30 minutes as an investment into their time, as opposed to like you're taking away from my rehearsal time or whatever that is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And and so I think kind of back to the example I said with like the students I have that are really honest with what they need. If we can just continue to be honest and genuine with what we need, and we can have that great set of communication skills going back and forth with not just like artistic directors, but teachers and students and whatnot, then I think we can just really begin to facilitate an environment that's more positive and conducive to mental health and that space.
Yes. So, yes.
Yeah.
I love it.
We'll get there eventually.
Yeah. The crowd just went wild.
Woo! Yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Thanks.
All right. Well, we're starting to come to a close here. I've already asked you my first fun closing question in your first episode. So I'm going to just pose the second one to you.
Yeah, sure.
Just to kind of lighten things up a little bit before we head out. So I'm going to give you my magic wand.
Oh, yes.
And you get to wave it. But You only get to change one aspect of the ballet world. What would it be?
One aspect of the ballet world. If I could change one aspect of the ballet world, what would it be?
And don't worry, there are 40 plus other people who've changed other things, so don't feel the pressure to change, you know, like.
Right. Oh, gosh. I think my first instinct is to say communication.
Yeah.
Because I think if we have more communication, then we can begin to understand all these other things. But I think if I could make it kind of, I think it's like honest communication. Because I think if we have honest communication and it's not just like, I'm tired today, I need 30 minutes. It's like, I'm actually going through something.
Yeah.
And do you know what I mean? Like, as opposed to just throwing something out there because like, oh, my ankle's a little sore. No, like I need to take it easy. And because I think if we could have honest communication with not only artistic staff, but with ourselves too, to understand better what we need, then I think if we understand what we need, we can better communicate it to others. And so I just think that that would facilitate not just a greater awareness of mental health, but a greater way of going about then taking the next step of understanding like what is needed to be done.
Yeah.
After we've created that awareness.
Yeah.
I think honest communication would do that.
That's really great. I love that, especially that piece about being honest with yourself and what you truly need. And if you're not sure, if you're having certain feelings, then please click the link in the show notes to find the best mental health care professional for you. You know, it's just one more thing. Yeah. If you know something's not quite right and you're sitting with it and you can't quite figure it out, you know.
Absolutely. It's so necessary. And I think that's also a part of it is we can't expect others to understand what's going on if we can't fully understand what's going on. If we can't understand what's going on either. So just being an important piece of it to always keep in the back of our head.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. So, so good. I love it.
Yeah. Thank you. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, absolutely. So good. All right. Well, before I let you go, please, please, please tell everybody where they can listen to The Mental Game, your socials, all the stuff. And and also if they want to come take class with you.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm on social media. The Mental Game has an Instagram profile, the_mental_game. You can also follow my personal JG Kielich, K-E-L-I-C-H. The Mental Game is out on Spotify and Apple Podcasts right now. And if you go to the social media pages, it should be linked so that you could find it easier. But you should be able to find it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And we have at the moment, I have 2 episodes out. I'm putting a 3rd one out this week. And then hopefully by the time this comes out, we'll have a whole lot more. So lots to listen to. Awesome. Absolutely. Yeah. So I appreciate that.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming back today. As always, this has been a fascinating, really great conversation. And I know I can't wait to continue more conversations with you in the future.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
That was a great episode with Glenn. He's always so much fun to talk to. I just love his energy. And I'm really, really proud of him and so excited for you all to check out his new podcast, The Mental Game. I know I spoke to him a year ago when he was just sort of putting some ideas together about potentially having a podcast, and it's so exciting to see it come to fruition. I really loved his perspectives on teaching that he shared today and how class is not for him, but rather for his students. And I think that although that sounds like a pretty obvious point, I don't know about you guys, but I certainly have experienced teachers who made the class about them and definitely not about their students or about the work. And it showed, and it was frustrating. But he really seems to have this really great, healthy perspective of, you know, planning a class, of course, and having a curriculum and following a syllabus, but understanding that that may not always go to plan every single day that he comes into class, and being able to adapt and really meet his students where he's at is so, so important. And I just love that so much. I also love his mental health check-ins that he does before class starts, the thumbs up, middle down. I think that's so simple, but it's a really, really easy tool that any teacher can incorporate into their class, no matter what age group they're working with. And it gives your students an opportunity to really open up to you and let you know how they're doing. And that can certainly affect their performance and should affect, you know, how you might adjust for that day. And I thought that was really cool. I also love his approach to retirement. It seems like it's a really fluid approach. And he's found this beautiful balance of his love for education, his love for mental health, and pursuing a career in that field, and with performing still, not to mention his real estate business. I mean, the guy's got balance. I mean, you have to say that. I mean, the guy's got balance, right? He really seems to be enjoying his life and finding fulfillment in so many different areas, and it's really an inspiration, and I really commend him for finding that balance and still taking the time to fulfill his artistic needs and filling that bucket as well. So congratulations, Glenn, on the podcast and all of your success. And it's just really great having him back. Thank you so much, you guys, for listening today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. And if you did, please go ahead and leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, follow the pod on Spotify, and share it with just 3 friends to get the word out. And if you have any questions, particular topics you'd like me to cover, or guests you'd like to hear from, you can email those to me at dancebetterpodcast@gmail.com, or you could send me a direct message on Instagram at dancebetterpodcast. Thank you so much for listening today, you guys. I really appreciate it. I cannot wait to learn with you all on the next episode. Bye!